Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight we're on episode 256, and we are going to be chatting a little bit about bushcraft etiquette here tonight. So Ben, this was one of your brainchild ideas, and honestly, you're a little better at etiquette than I am. I have been told sometimes I can come off as abrasive, blunt, hairy, what other things? So, not to say I don't practice a little bit of etiquette, but I do have a tendency to be a little rough around the edges. I tend to avoid more than interact, and that can sometimes give people the wrong impression, which I'm sure some other folks out there that are listening to our podcast here can relate to. Much like yourself, Ben, I know you are quite like me, where you prefer your... you enjoy your privacy.
I enjoy my own company. Sometimes more than the other people I have to deal with. But I think this is it's a good subject. It's not something we talk about a lot. We do talk about aspects of it. There's certain etiquette that we talk about all the time. And the one I'm going to quickly point out, and I think most people will agree, is leave no trace. Good etiquette is when you go into the woods, you leave it in the same condition or better than when you found it. You know, you shouldn't leave garbage lying around. You shouldn't go tearing down trees unnecessarily, especially live ones. Don't damage things that don't need to be damaged. And, you know, that alone is really good etiquette. If you can do that much, you've already, you know, doing a lot more than some people. I've been to, you know, regular campsites, you know, campsites that are frequented by a lot of people. And people have cleared an area and set it up, and there's been garbage left there. And there's nothing more disgusting when you walk in and you see somebody else's garbage. That in itself is poor etiquette.
Yeah. And that's the thing. A lot of people don't understand why we are so big advocates for leave no trace. And it is just that. It's polite, it's respectful, and it's good etiquette. Not just for the bushcrafters coming up behind you either that want to use the area, but for anybody going through that area. Maybe just for a nature walk, fishing. There may be a dad or a mom or whoever taking their kids out for a walk. They don't want to see your empty beer cans and beer bottles in the woods. Biggest pet peeve. Something as simple as a beer can left in the woods. And everybody's like, oh, it'll go away eventually. But it weighs nothing. Take it out.
Yeah, you were able to carry it in full. You should be able to carry it out empty.
And I mean, this is coming from experience. Both Ben and I, we enjoy a few adult beverages in the woods. We never go too much. But on any of our camping trips, we've always brought a few. We're not anti-drink, anything like that. It's fine. Just be decent about it. You know what I mean? Take your stuff out when you go. It's just polite. It's good manners. And it's respectful to the environment around you. And not that I'm a tree-hugging hippie. Because I know somebody out there is rolling their eyes and saying that to use a slang term. But I do appreciate nature. Most of us that go out in bushcrafting, we appreciate nature, I think. I hope, anyway. Nobody out there secretly under the trees going, I can't wait to, you know, get rid of everything. Hopefully that's not the case. But have a little respect for nature. And if you do have a little respect for nature and you do like going out there, keep it clean. That way, the next time you go, it's not a poop show. You know what I mean?
Oh, I just seen that Lawrence Camus had asked a question, but it's not. He advertised our podcast for it. So thank
awesome.
You, Lawrence. Yeah, 100%. But I think I really wanted to talk about some of the more interpersonal ones, and you've kind of hit on that. Let's talk a little bit about alcohol. One of the things I often have, especially if I'm going with people I'm not familiar with, is alcohol acceptable for this trip? And the answer is not always yes. You really do need to ask the people you're going with, are they planning on bringing it, or do they mind if you have? And generally, in my opinion, if they're not bringing any, I don't. Because some people aren't comfortable with that, and it makes them uncomfortable to see other people drinking or nervous. And so that's one thing that I do. And I'm not saying everyone has to do it, but if you're going out, you're going to spend time in the woods with somebody. If the company that's going with you, it is good etiquette to ask them, you know, what kind of trip are they looking for, and make sure that that's something that matches with what you need and want. And honestly, sometimes that may be the reason that's not a good camping partner. And that is good too. Like, let someone know, the type of trip I'm looking for is X. And if they're looking for a Y and those aren't compatible, then.
I don't know if anybody heard that, but apparently it said my camera disconnected for a second. Hopefully there was no problems there. But anyway, yeah, if I'm the senior, quote unquote here, and I'm using this term loosely, the senior bushcrafter, and people are relying on me to take them into the woods and have a good time, almost guaranteed I'm not taking nothing. You know what I mean? I want to be on not necessarily high alert, but I want to be in a condition that if anything ever happened or if I have to make a decision, I'm not obstructed in any way. You know what I mean? If we get in there and things are good and somebody slips and rolls an ankle, I want to make sure that my medical first responder training is accurate, not sloppy. You know what I mean? Or I'm in the right mind to make a good decision off, yeah, maybe we should better head out. That's bad enough. I think we should leave instead of the perhaps alcohol induced, eh, you'll be fine in the morning. You know what I mean? So if that comes up, that's good etiquette too. If people are going to be relying on you, it's good etiquette to keep yourself in a state where they can appreciate and actually rely on you. If people are trying to rely on you and you are, half stumbling over a log, or better yet, passed out around that log, you're not doing anyone any good. You know what I mean?
And I think that's a good point. And I really agree with you. Like, the trip me and you might have is totally different when we're taking other people. And we have to look at that, say, okay, I'm going with Robert. I know his skill level, I know his interest, I know his want, and I know that we're a good match so that if we decide to have a few drinks, we're going to be okay. We're very confident in each other's abilities and our own restraint from getting ourselves into trouble. Or at least being able to get out of the trouble we get into.
No, absolutely.
See,
And that's the thing. And you gauge that stuff. And it like these aren't written rules anywhere. Most of what we're talking about tonight's not going to be written rules. These are just good etiquette things. You know what I mean? So and I mean that's not just alcohol, folks. If you do recreational drugs, and I don't judge, same kind of deal. You know what I mean? There's a time, there's a place, there's a group. Know the group you're with, know the experience level you're with, act accordingly. And that's kind of it.
I think this really goes well with almost anything you can take. Alcohol, drugs, believe it or not, kids and dogs fall in the same category. If you're going, make sure and you're taking kids or that there's others coming with you, make sure you know what they're bringing with them. Because if they're bringing kids, that might be a totally different trip than you had planned. That's going to take different effort. And I mean, talking from two guys who have kids, there is a time and place for kids. And there's a time and place for that. And you need to adjust those trips with respect to who's going. So take a look at everyone who's going and make sure it's the right people for the trip. The other thing, and this is sort of always a rule of mine, everyone that goes in with me must come out with me.
Yeah, that's a great rule of thumb too, or etiquette, whatever you want to call it. Don't leave somebody in the woods, even if they're like, ah, I'm gonna hang out and stay. I've been in situations where people are like, oh, I'm just gonna stay a few more days. And you know what? If we went in together and the plan was we were supposed to come out together, we're coming out together. If you go back in on your own afterwards, that's on you. But you're coming out at least to hit to the car, make sure you got all the supplies you need, all of that stuff. That way you have an opportunity to be like, on second thought, I'm going to leave with you guys. Because if you, especially if you're the only mode of transportation, you're now putting somebody in a potentially dangerous situation. And depending on their skill level and all that stuff, I mean, you could be really leaving somebody bad off.
So that's a, and we always move at the pace of the slowest person. If somebody wants a break, give them a break, sit with them. These are, it seems like basic rules, but not everyone does it. Sometimes people are like, ah, he'll catch up and they'll take off. And the problem is maybe that person isn't capable of catching up, or maybe they are, but it's good to have that comfort. So those are some rules. There's some other ones. So that's with people you know or people you're going with. What happens when you meet up with other people? This happens a lot. You've been in this situation, I'm pretty sure. I've been in this situation.
Good many a times.
Right? You go into the woods, maybe you have an intent to go to a site, you get to the site you set up, and someone else shows up wanting that same site. What is the proper etiquette? How do you handle it? Generally, unless you've paid for the site, the site belongs to the first person to show up. And it's pretty common knowledge that if you show up and the people are already there, you just quietly go on and find the next available site. That being said, there is occasionally at times when this might not be possible.
So and this maybe is what I was thinking too, because I knew you were going to bounce on this. And one of the things I was going to throw at you is, what happens if it's the only campsite within a safe traveling distance? Perhaps it's getting late. You were expecting this campsite to be free. You blow in, there's people there. It's getting dark. You know, the next campsite is maybe only 5-6 kilometers up the road, but you don't got that much daylight to work with, maybe on familiar trails, whatever the case may be. So how would you handle that?
Well, for me, there's a lot of things involved in this. If I'm the intruder, I feel it's my responsibility to give that other, those other people all the respect and privacy that they request. So, you know, you could offer to share a fire with them. You could, but if they give you indication that they don't want you there, try to set up as far away as possible. Try to respect their privacy. There have been times when you meet somebody in the woods and they're happy to see you and are happy to share their fire and their food and whatever with you, and you end up making a great friend, and that's a possibility. But it is really important to show that common respect. So if you're thinking of staying, if you are the intruder in this case, you can ask. You say, listen, man, like, the next site is 4 or 5 kilometers down. It's already 7 o'clock. I really thought I'd be further along. Do you mind if I set up over here? And they'll usually tell you that, yay, it's okay. A lot of people probably would anyways, but just really pay attention to their body language and get a feel for what's going on. Are they saying yes because they feel like they have to, or are they saying yes because it really doesn't bother them?
And sometimes you could get into a case where somebody does say yes because they feel they have to. And like Ben said, follow the body language. You may have to, there may be no other options, and there's some things you can do there. I've been in this situation before, going into a campsite and it was used, and I was like, okay, I can't get out tonight and I can't go on tonight. The plan was to be here and set up, and all of a sudden there's people here, you know what I mean? And I've gone up and just been like, hey guys, look, yeah, I get it. You guys are here. I'm sorry I'm intruding, but the reality is I can't get out right now. And I can't find another spot. Do you mind if I set up locally and I'll just leave in the morning? And I've been met with no, you know what I mean? Like, no, you can't camp here. We're here. And sometimes it is just as much as being like, look, guys, I'm just trying to be safe. I don't want to get hurt in the woods. Literally, I'll just take a little side over here. I'll get some rest. I'll leave at first light. Most often than not, they're going to be fine with that. But have you ever actually been in the situation where somebody is just straight up like, no, we don't want you here. You got to go somewhere else.
I have not. I've never actually had to intrude on another camper, but I have talked to many people who have been the sort of the flip side there at that, and some of them were in paid campgrounds. One couple I knew were staying in Kedgy, and they had picked the site, they had paid for it, they got back there. A couple came in about an hour or two after they were set up, and they said they were trying to make it to the next site, but there was no way they were making it. And they asked if they could stay that night. And apparently they were found to be fairly rude, ignorant, and had even like put unreasonable demands on them, asking them to be quiet, asking them to shut the, you know, turn the, you know, put the fire out at a early hour. And they're like, this is not the trip we signed up for. We signed up to have the site. We're letting you here. And you should be more respectful for the fact that we've done this, you know, out of the goodness of our heart. And if this is how you want to act, they wanted to kick them out. They really did. So do understand that if you are the intruder, the people that are already there have the precedence. So what they want, as long as it doesn't harm your physical or mental person, is generally what you're going to go with. If you don't want any part of it, stay out of it. Stay as far away as possible and give them their privacy, and try the best to not even pay attention to what's going on there. And I'm not saying it's like they're doing anything nefarious, although what people do in the woods is what's up to them. If they want to sing and laugh and carry on at the fire, they can do that. If, you know,
yep. And that's the thing, if you're intruding on somebody, it's literally their area, right? You kind of got to respect that. I know for me, and this kind of leads into my point, I didn't mean to cut you off, but maybe you're going the same direction. Hopefully I'm steering us in this direction. I don't know about you, but if that happens, and the couple times it's happened to me, I give minimalistic campsite setup a whole new meaning. Like, I may be going in expecting to set up a nice big fancy camp, and if I get stuck and I have to camp somewhere near somebody else, it is like literally the bare minimum I need to set up to get through that night. I've even changed my plans from like sleeping on an air mattress in a tent to basically just grabbing a sleeping bag and curling up under a tree just to be like, nah, I'm just gonna get some sleep, bail in the morning. You know what I mean? And the second that the light comes up, I'm packed up and gone. I've gone as far as I won't make my own fire. I'll try and use like one of my little stoves or something like that, unless I have no choice. I'm not gonna starve. Don't get me wrong. You don't get this size by starving. But once again, if they have a fire and I make a fire, I could potentially be cutting into their firewood. And that's something a lot of people don't think about. There is only so much viable firewood in certain areas. And Ben, you and I ran into this when we were down at the waterfall. There's only so much firewood there. And if somebody else tried to make a second fire, there was no way there was going to be enough firewood for two campsites there. You know what I mean? So I don't
We
like to try.
walked,
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
so we walked quite a ways, both up, downstream, and across the river, and scavenged what dead standing we could find. And you're right, it wasn't excessive by any means. So, good point.
So yeah, for me, like I try to keep it as minimalistic as possible. And there's a caveat to this, unless they're very inviting. In which case, if they're like, yeah, come on over and share our fire, yeah, I'm the first guy that's gonna be right there and be like, hey, thanks, guys, and get warm by their fire. But at the same time, as Ben said, kind of read the body language. If they're kind of leaving you alone, kind of leave them alone. Don't try and intrude. If they're inviting you over, now weigh your options. Be like, most times I'm a social feller. I know it doesn't show, but out in the woods, if we're bushcrafting, everything's fair game if somebody wants to chat. So if somebody invites me over and says, hey, come on over and have a seat by the fire, we're just chit-chatting. Yeah, I'm there. But at the same time, you know what I mean? But and once again, I kind of weigh this with the alcohol thing. How bad off are these people? Are they inebriated and they're just looking for some sort of social entertainment? In which case, I may stay back a little bit, but read the situation. If you feel comfortable, by all means, join in, have a little, you know, use their fire, maybe do your cooking, stuff like that, leave their firewood, and then just politely excuse yourself, potentially earlier than they would, or at least I would anyway. Go off, get an early night, get an early morning, and then, you know, beat feet as soon as the sun comes up and let those people be. Because hopefully you can go find another site now that you've got a full day ahead of you. Or at least you can get an early start on going back to your vehicle.
One thing that, I mean, this is a bit of an iffy one, and this is one I don't have a straight answer to. If you meet somebody like that, and maybe you say, oh, they're really nice people, I'd love to speak to them again, is it okay to ask them for their name or number?
I generally go the other way. I will basically be like, hey, it was good talking to you. If you guys ever want to meet up and try something like this again, I carry Atlantic Bushcraft business cards. And I'll give my contact information to them more so than try and ask for their information. You know what I mean? I find it's better etiquette to offer up your information. And with a business card, if I turn around and they throw it in the fire, I'm not heartbroken. You know what I mean? But maybe they'll hold on to it. But I'm not gonna be like, hey, what's your phone number and write it down. You know what I mean? Some people, even when you know them for a while, are not comfortable giving you personal contact information because they have a certain level of relationship with you. Like you are a bushcrafting, very loose bushcrafting friend. And while we're out in the woods, we're friends. But when I go back home, you know, I kind of keep to myself. And you gotta respect that too. You know what I mean? Because people have different walks of life. You don't know what these folks have going on at home. You don't know what their privacy is because. I mean, you know as well as I do, Ben, and I just said it. When I get out in the woods, I get a lot more open. When I'm home and around, you know, the social setting and rural areas and stuff like that, I tend to be a little bit more restrained. I'm a little more private. You know what I mean? Like, I've been here in my location for 8 years now, and I think I'm just starting to get to know my neighbors' names. And it's not by I'm avoiding them, it's just I don't have any specific reason to go out of my way to interact with them. I work all day. I leave early in the morning. I'm home later at night. We just don't cross paths often. Now, on the flip side, one of my neighbors, when I first moved in, made a point of coming directly over after 3 or 4 days that I was living here, visiting me, and then continuing to do it every so few days thereafter, which just isn't my style. But once again, you don't know what other people's styles are. They were just a real good person. They like to be social in the neighborhood. And they were kind of a gossip, but anyway, they wanted all the dirty details and stuff. But that's, like I said, you just don't know what people are like. So respect whatever decisions they want. Instead of trying to get their information, offer up your own if that's something you want to do. And then don't take it personally if they don't get back to you. I mean, you're rolling the dice anyway. And the other thing I would never really do is give my home address. I don't know if anybody has noticed it here on the podcast after almost 5 years, which Ben and I have been talking about. I don't think I've ever said the town I live in once, and I've definitely never given out anything close to my address, as well as we've never disclosed Ben's address either. That's just asking for trouble. There's a difference between giving somebody a cell phone number or an email address, more likely the email address, than giving them like, hey, here's where I live. Show up whenever you want. You know what I mean?
True. Right? 100%. That's very true. So that's kind of what happens if you have to like invade somebody's campsite. The other thing, and this is a very regular thing, even just traveling through someone's campsite. I've experienced this at both like places like Kedji and other national parks and provincial parks, where there's a trail that walks right through a campsite. If you have to do that, especially if there's like portaging routes or something close to it, try to make your transition from that point as clean and as unobtrusive as possible. It's impossible not to let them kind of know you're coming through. Just do it as well as you can. It's perfectly acceptable and probably preferable if you can at least say hi to them. And with me, when I meet somebody in that kind of situation, I will share any information I know about the immediate adjacent areas. So if there's an area that's flooded or a tree down, or if there's been some poor weather, I might give them some feedback on that. And from there, I will judge if I want to continue the conversation or not. I have met really interesting people that way. And I've met people that really don't want anything to do with me.
Nope. And much like yourself, one of the etiquette things that I do is if I am getting close to or intruding on somebody's campsite, even if I'm just passing through, is I do make my presence known. I'm not going to be like, hey, you folks over there, I'm coming through. You know what I mean? But I do make a point of saying like, hey, how's it going, folks? Great day to be in the woods. And that may be the end of my conversation. You know what I mean? But I don't like the idea of sneaking up on somebody. You know what I mean? And it's not that I'm super quiet in the woods. But I mean, sometimes you get in your zone, you're not making a whole lot of noise. It's pretty easy to keep walking through. You may startle somebody and they may take it the wrong way. You may be completely benign in your meaning. You just want to walk by, but now all of somebody thinks you're creeping around their campsite. You know what I mean? It's better to let people know that you're just passing through with a quick, hey, how's it going, folks? Or than to just try and be quiet and run away. Now, that being said, if I'm walking through and I clearly see they're like, at the other side of their campsite, maybe swimming in the lake or something, I'm not going to go out of my way to go over and introduce myself, obviously. But if I'm walking close enough to a campsite, even if I don't see anybody, potentially, if I see tents or hammocks or something like that, if I'm walking by, I may just give a, hey, folks, and that's it. You know what I mean? If anybody in a couple instances, I've had people, you know, stick their head out of a tent and just be like, ah, and close the tent. And other times they'll come out of the woodwork and sometimes you'll get no answer, but at least you attempted to let people know that you're just passing through and that you're not just creeping around their campsite. You know what I mean? Because realistically, and we've talked about this before in our previous episode just a week or two ago about fears versus dangers, people's minds can race when they're in the woods. Even experienced seasoned people, if they see somebody that's not supposed to be there, they start wondering, why are they there? And even if it's benign, like I said, just walking through, people's minds race. It's human nature.
And honestly, I mean, you, like you said, you get open in the woods, but a lot of people feel very vulnerable. They know that they just can't dial, you know, 911 and someone's going to be there in 10, 15 minutes. They know they're in the woods. They're generally away from everyone. So the interactions there are much more in many ways Wild West than they are modern day. Because you don't know how that's going to go down. And so showing that level of respect and giving people the space they want is extremely important. So I think that's really important. Same thing in just meeting somebody in the trail. It's perfectly acceptable to say hi, nod, don't go staring, don't force a conversation. And and just move along. If they offer to speak, it's perfectly acceptable and in my opinion, just polite to respond to them. You know, and you never know, sometimes somebody might need help and afraid to ask. So showing a slightly friendly demeanor might mean that somebody who's very nervous and terrified might actually open up and say, man, I've been back here for 3 days and I don't know how to get out.
And that's the thing. That's why my go-to is just, hey, or hey, folks.
How you doing?
Good day to be in the woods, eh? And there's the Canadian coming out, eh? But anyway, yeah, it's just, nice day to be in the woods, eh? And you can go from there. They may just be like, And I've gotten that before, just a grunt, like, eh, okay, whatever. And I've gotten, yep, hey, how's it going? And they leave me alone. And other times I've had people just literally be like, oh, yeah, it's a great day to be in the woods. Good times out here. Hey, I notice you were got whatever, gear XYZ. What do you think of that? And I've gotten into some really good conversations as well. But generally, I let them initiate. I just give my normal, hey, how's it going? And then just read the situation from there. You know what I mean? Because once again, they don't know what to expect of me. But I also don't know what to expect of them.
100%. Yeah. No, I think that's really important. Definitely covers a large part of what we've been talking about. So I just want to summarize and make sure that we're on to sort of the same page. First thing we did talk about is just general good behavior, like, you know, leave no chase, don't make a mess, things like that. We talked a little bit about... once you get to a site, what you do if somebody else, or if you have to intrude on that site. And then we talked about just meeting people in the woods. We also talked about the right behavior when you're camping with somebody and how to set up what you're planning on doing and what you're taking and make sure that everyone is okay with the trip that's planned, to make sure that everyone has the most comfort level in what we're all doing. So I think those are the big things. Is there anything we're missing on this topic?
Not specifically on the trail. I did want to talk a little bit about out on the water. It's another big thing about when you are out bushcrafting. A lot of us enjoy being out on the water, and there is some proper etiquette there too. And one of the things that I have seen people do, and I'm not such a big fan of it, is if they see another boat in the water, they just try to beeline it for them. You know what I mean? I have no idea why. People have done it to me. They'll paddle literally like straight line to me and then just be like, hey. And I'm like, hi. Can I help you? No. You know what I mean? Like, do you need something? And that's kind of one of those other things. If people are out in the woods, or sorry, out on the water, their little bubble is kind of their area. You don't need to intrude on unless, you know, they're like, everybody's boating to the mouth of the lake where it goes into a river. They're going to a portaging spot. That's understandable. But if you're just like out for a paddle, give people their room. Let them enjoy their water. You know what I mean? It's the same as their campsite. They're just out there to have a good time. Don't intrude. If you do happen to cross paths, just a quick, yep, nice day to be on the water, eh? And just keep on going. It's so weird and off-putting. And I find it especially on the water, Ben. And I don't know about you. In the woods, I don't find it as bad. But on the water, I find it like you have to go out of your way to do that. You are purposely being weird in my mind. And not necessarily in all cases, but I do find it a little more off-putting than in the woods.
In the woods, you're generally on a trail. So you pretty well have to pass. It's very rare you'll see somebody in the woods you're not going to pass coming or going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's very much it. And you brought up the water, and I got a couple of things I want to talk a little bit about that. So there's some really big ones for portaging. But yeah, definitely give them space. Also, if you see somebody on the shore and you're paddling and you don't need to approach that particular piece of shore, don't. It's perfectly fine to wave. Give a wave, let them know you see them. They'll wave and let you know they see them. Unless they wave you in, you know, just continue on, do your thing. Unless that happens to be where you're going, like you said, if it's your portage or it's a narrow and you have no choice but to go through there, give them their space. You never know, especially in the woods. There is a few things that we should probably just briefly mention, and this is a family friendly one, but some people do things like skinny dipping and stuff that might make somebody uncomfortable. If you see that, it's okay. Ignore it. Stay out of it. Don't become part of it. If you see somebody is in a position that especially might be vulnerable for them, just pretend you don't see it. Just continue on. Don't stare. Don't engage. Unless, obviously, like I said, they're calling you in. And even then, probably the best idea to avoid it. But you could come across this stuff, especially as you approach the evening hours and people are maybe trying to just get cleaned up from a sweaty day. They may be out in the lake or the river cleaning up. And it could be that they aren't expedition, you know, they don't want you to notice. Just give them that freedom.
And I've been on the other side of this. And I've told this story before, but it's a great time in here. Once again, waterfall. One of the rocks there. I can't remember which one. If it was the one on the other side or the one inside. Anyway, I'm on this rock, stark naked, and some people come to the top of the waterfall, and I'm just sitting there, and they look down at me and wave, and I look up at them and wave, and then I'm like, I got to stand up, and I don't know how to handle it. You know what I mean? Because they weren't going anywhere. And eventually I just stood up, and I'm like, all right, screw it. I got stuff to do, and I moved on about my business, and they immediately disappeared. But, I mean, you never know. You know what I mean? And just like you said, Ben, I was just cleaning up. I had a washcloth and some soap, and I was just trying to – I was in there for a few days. I think I was in there for 5-6 days this time. And I just wanted a bath. You know what I mean? I never imagined anybody would be in there. But it happens.
Do you have you read or seen any of Kevin Gallen's books?
I know of them. I don't own any, no.
Okay, I have a few of his books. He's the, he might be the Happy Camper is one of the titles, but he's wrote a few books, and he talks a lot about canoeing, especially the Algonquin area, and he has a really interesting story where him and his buddy have been canoeing for, I think, a day or two, and it's approaching the evening time, and they decide to go for a quick dip. He likes to go completely natural. His friend had like the Speedo, the tight little thing on, and they're in swimming, and all of a sudden around the corner comes the girl guides. So a bunch of basically preteen young girls or teenage young girls, and here he is in a very compromising position. Something happened, and one of them ended up getting injured, and they had to get like treated by the local the girl guide. So it was a kind of embarrassing thing to both of them.
I was gonna say this story is shaping up to be awful fun.
Oh man,
well, explaining going on here.
He's an adult man, and it's one of these things. Obviously, nothing inappropriate happened. It was very embarrassing for him and probably everyone involved. It can happen, like. Just know that it can happen. It is a thing. And it is just the human body. We should just let it slide.
Me, I'm solid with nudity. I don't care in the slightest. Yeah. But not everybody has that mindset. You know what I mean? And generally, I try to be respectful of that to other people. I'm not going to walk around naked in front of other people because I know it makes other people uncomfortable. But, I mean, it doesn't make me uncomfortable in any way, shape, or form. Most times, I don't even notice it. Which is kind of weird, I know, but it literally means so little to me. So if you are like that on either end of the spectrum, just realize there is another end of the spectrum. Don't just assume everybody is like what you are.
Yeah, and I'm kind of likewise with you. I mean, I went a little while ago camping, and one of the plans was to hit a hot spring. We did not hit the hot spring. I did not know what the etiquette for that area was, so I took swimsuit. And when I got partway in and I was hanging out with this guy that don't know that well, but we've been trying to camp and we have camped together a few times. I asked him, I said, what is the etiquette when you get there? And he said, oh, people are all natural. He said, nobody wears swimsuits there. And I'm like, okay, good to know. I brought some because I did not know what it was going to be like. But that's just something to be aware of. Some places it's going to be considered acceptable. Sometimes places it's not. If you can find anything about it, do. Again, making sure you're showing everyone around you the respect that they deserve. Mm-hmm. If somebody doesn't want to see it, try not to do it in front of them, obviously. And if people don't care, then don't make a big deal of it and just let it slide. This doesn't have to be awkward for anyone. The other thing I wanted to talk about, again, canoeing, kayaking. I've done a fair bit of it. I really enjoy it. It's probably one of my favorite ways to enjoy the woods. And here's the thing. When you're portaging, you're oftentimes going to come up on other people. Not everyone portages at the same rate. Not everyone can carry the same load. Not everyone is in such a rush. I am not the fastest. I am not the slowest. There are faster people than me. There are slower people than me.
Ben, there's not a whole lot of people faster than you, bud. I've been in the woods with you. I think our dearly departed friend Steve would also have a little bit to say about that as well, Ben.
Yeah. But I've gone in. I've seen the guys who are running ultralight equipment, and when they're portaging from point to point, you know, it's they got it down to a science, and they double carry, and they're moving. If you come up across somebody and, like, you want to overtake them, and they're not getting off the trail, it's probably best to take a breath and just let them go on. The other thing is when you get, if you're doing a double carry, so you're making two trips, but that's what I mean by double carry. So you take your pack and gear one trip and then your canoe or kayak in the next trip. When you get to the end, don't block the trail with your gear and don't take like the prime spots to leave your gear if you have to, if you can avoid it. So oftentimes there's like canoe rest and stuff at the end. If you got your canoe up resting and someone else is trying to get out and set up, you're making their job much more difficult. So if you can put it to the side, deal with it when you can get there. Some people absolutely do need those things, and it is first come first serve, but if you're gonna hog it, that could be a problem. You know, don't harass people. If you can, give them the chance to get past you. If somebody is approaching you behind and you can't afford to let them go by, let them go by. You know, it's, you're in there to enjoy it. I'll often pull aside, put my gear in the woods if I have to, and let them go on and pick it back up and continue going. And usually when that happens, I'll give them a few minutes to get ahead of me so I'm not overrunning them in a few minutes. So
absolutely. And that's the thing I was just about to say, and you already went down this rabbit hole, is what happens if you do get overtaken on the trail? And that's the beauty of it there. Be aware of your surroundings. And if somebody wants to go by, let them. It's not a race. Everybody, as Ben said, travels at their own speed. What is a light walk for me is not a light walk for my daughter. She doesn't have the same stride I have. And what's a, you know, a light walk for me is probably even an even lighter walk for Ben, because his inseam is at least 6 inches longer than my legs. So, I mean, everybody walks a little different. I tend to be fairly aggressive when I walk. I tend to get into what my wife has called a death march, where I set a speed and that's the speed. You know what I mean? Like, there is no, I'll go a little faster here and slow down here. It's like, nope, we're marching. It's a speed. And it's just how I am in the woods. And I know you're very much the same, Ben. It's that you kind of disassociate your mind from what you're doing to a degree, and you just kind of get at it. You know what I mean?
In the military, my sergeant used to say, you put your mind in neutral and your body in drive. And that is what exactly. You do. You kind of shut it down. And when I'm in that zone, if you want to put it, I very much do exactly that. I put my mind thinking about totally different things that has absolutely nothing to do with the trip. And I just keep walking. I am almost unaware of my body when I'm doing that. And it's an interesting feeling. If you've never felt it, I can't really explain it, but you can think about 1,000 things and you just cover it. And all of a sudden you're at the other end and you're like, oh, but if you think about each step, it is grueling. It is really hard. And so I try not to. And I have done things that I think are impressive. I've carried a canoe up and down a hill that I really, if I sat back and thought about it, say, no, I can't do that. But I did it. And I did it probably out of spite, but that's okay. You do kind of have something that I want to address a little bit. My wife has coined a phrase, not everyone is Ben. And this is kind of a pride thing, but it is true. I think we should all say this about ourselves. Not everyone is Robert. Not everyone is Steve. Don't expect anyone else to be you and capable of everything you are and you can do. Because if you do, you're going to generally be disappointed in life. And so when I go into woods and I'm like, oh, I can do that. And my wife is, don't think everyone else can do that. Just because you're okay with hopping from rock to rock with a canoe on top of your head doesn't mean everyone is. Some people will get there and won't even be able to cross it with nothing, you know, hindering them. You have to keep those things in mind, that what you're comfortable with, what you've grown accustomed to, is not what other people have. And you will hear people say, I can't do that. And it's not that they physically can't. I'm going to tell you right now, but they've mentally can't. And if they've decided they can't, and they're not going to do it until they've changed their mind. Nothing you say or do will change that. There's other people who will push themselves beyond their limits, and you will find them full out exhausted at the end of a trip. And I've been there, and I've brought people to that point where I've gone in and people tried to keep up with me. And I didn't realize they were struggling, and at the end, they were really roughing it. And poor Steve was an example of that. The trip back to the cabin was more than Steve was physically or mentally prepared to do. And
yeah. And I mean, it's real easy to do that too, because especially if you're leading newer folks in. Once again, I use the waterfall as my point of reference because I know I've thrown pictures up there, and hopefully anybody that follows us, they kind of know the area. Melissa's mother, sister, and stepfather, I was bringing them into the waterfall. And I had made 3 trips by the time the girls had made 1 trip in. And we're talking hot weather. We're talking like 35 degrees with humidity. And once again, I got into my death march. This was also the trip where they brought way too much stuff and threw it in the woods and stuff like that. And I'm like, no, I'll go get it. And I just kept going and going and going and going. And Bobby, God love him, tried to keep up with me. And I think I almost killed him. Like, legitimately almost killed him. Because he was an older follower. I mean, at the time, he was probably, every bit of 58, if not older. You know what I mean? And he couldn't keep up with, at the time, I was probably my early 30s. Late 20s, early 30s, I can't remember now. But anyway, it's just, he tried to keep up. I didn't pay attention. I almost put him in a bad situation. So that wasn't good etiquette in my part. You know what I mean? Once again, not everybody's Ben, not everybody's Robert. I assume, yeah, I'm going. Come on, Bobby, let's go. And no, you can't do that.
No, 100% you can't. And I really think people need to think about that and respect that. You know, like we said at the beginning, move at the slowest person's pace. Make sure you take into consideration the other people. The other thing, I guess this is a really good one too. Where it comes to food. For me, and this is always a personal thing, I usually plan my own food because I don't know what other people want and like. Mm. But I do plan my own food. But I'm usually willing to share, right?
Yep.
So when we went in, we shared some food. We had our thing. But do understand that not everyone's going to be okay with sharing food. Some people have special needs. I've camped with a guy who had severe gluten intolerance and would not touch any food somebody else made. Not that he didn't want to. It's just he knew from experience that if he took food that somebody else made, there was a pretty good chance he would feel sick for the next day.
Absolutely. And I mean, what I like to do, for what it's worth, is I make my own food much like yourself. And if I know I'm going with a group, I bring group items. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I have my own food as well. That way, you know, because I have some things that I like that I know other people don't. Like sardines and kippers and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Since not such a big thing for me anymore, but once upon a time. I hope Winston, if he's still alive, hears this sometime. I used to work with a fella named Winston. And one of his favorite meals was sardines, molasses, and bread. And this is when I worked for Natural Resources. And this is the exact same stuff we used to put in the bear traps to catch bears, right? So it was always the big joke. We're never going to catch a bear. We're going to get Winston. You know what I mean? But then he got me onto these damn things. And I don't know what it was about the sweet and salty. It was a good combination. But a lot of people can't even stomach looking at somebody eating that. So I wouldn't bring that for a group. You know what I mean?
Sounds like a newfie meal, honestly.
It totally is. Winston was a newf. And I say newf lovingly. Don't get me wrong. I love Newfoundland. And he was. And he got me onto the stuff. The only thing I did was add in a block of cheese because I'm a cheese maniac. I love cheese. And it was just absolutely... Yeah, Danny, this is what I mean. Danny's over there. He can't imagine eating this. And yeah, that's what I mean. It's you either appreciate it or you don't. And trust me, I completely understand people that don't. Because originally when I seen Winston eating it, I thought he had gotten into the bear food. Like literally, I thought he went and bought some for the bear and was just eating it before he put it into the trap. And I'm like, Winston, why are you eating the bear the bear bait? And he's like, what are you talking about? I got this out of my lunch can. I'm like, I just put the same damn thing in the trap. Funny situation, but yeah. not everyone's necessarily going to enjoy your tastes in food, but you can get some group food items that go over pretty well. Jiffy Pop. Everybody likes popcorn, and Jiffy Pop is fun to make over a campfire. Marshmallows. Most people will enjoy a good roasted marshmallow, and they keep fairly well. You know what I mean? Bags of mixed nuts. As you know, I love mixed nuts, and most people, providing they don't have a nut allergy, enjoy some sort of nut. So I go Walmart. They have the bags of mixed nuts. I prefer mine unroasted. I just like the plain, you know, shelled nuts, whatever. And I'll bring a bag of that, and I'll offer it up, because it's got almonds, cashews, hazelnuts, basil nuts. It's got a bunch of stuff in there. Most people can find something they enjoy. They may not enjoy all of it, but people are usually willing to pick out something in there, not to mention it's good protein. Yeah, but don't bring, like I said, the sardines and expect to sit down in a group of people and chomp into that every day, because you're probably going to be eating by yourself most times.
Yeah.
I guess that's a good etiquette thing there. Be respectful of other people, even with your food and drinks.
Yeah. So the other thing, obviously, is before you go in with any people, just discuss food and discuss what the plan is. I can't say how much pre-planning on a trip can really save you in trouble. So nobody really knows what to expect. And if you go in with expectation that somebody else is going to provide a certain meal or a certain way, you need to go in knowing what everyone is expected to do. What are you bringing? What are you not bringing? Are we sharing any items? Because, you know, I have seen where people went in with one expectation and reality was nobody else had the same expectation. And then everyone felt a little awkward. So you can really save yourself some embarrassment and trouble by simply making sure everyone clearly understands it. I did go in one time with a guy, and I don't think the sleeping arrangements were fully explained. And as a result, I had asked multiple times, do you have everything you need? And the person's like, oh yeah, I have everything. And then we get there and find out he has almost nothing. And I'm like, had you told me, I would have planned better. But, you know, they were unsure, they were uncomfortable maybe telling me exactly what they felt. And so it left them in a position that was not ideal.
Yeah, I pretty much touched on everything I want to talk about there. Ben, do you got anything else that you have lingering thoughts on?
No, I think that's pretty well it, honestly.
And I mean, we kind of went overboard and of course shared some stories, and we're coming up on 50 minutes, which is kind of impressive, but I always think, this will probably be a short topic, and here we are rolling into an hour again.
Yeah, no, I thought it would go pretty good, but there is a bit. I think it's really important to understand that these are the things that really can make or bake a trip, and it really can make everyone else's trip more comfortable. So that, you know, common basic respect for each other, and think about it. Would you be happy if this happened to you? And if unsure, make sure that everyone is aware of those things. And again,
what's the old saying? Do unto others as you would do unto others as you would have done to yourself. And the only thing I would add on to that is not everybody's Ben. In that context, not everybody's you. Yeah. You know what I mean? So just because you enjoy it, if you start down that path and it seems like it's going bad, read the room or the woods or whatever case may be in that point.
I think the expression usually goes, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But that isn't always the case. Some people are not comfortable with certain situations. So if you would be very, very happy if they rolled up and cooked you a meal, they may not be so happy if you roll up and give them a meal that they didn't really want. So ask first. It's like a lot of things, you know, get consent before you you impose yourself or your thoughts or ideas onto somebody, and you'll be a lot better. So yeah, that basic respect makes a huge deal.
Yeah, well, that's it for me tonight, folks. Once again, it's always been a pleasure. So next week, just because this is a little different than what we do, and Ben and I have already been talking about this a little bit, we did have a request from our Facebook page. So next week, for those that maybe enjoy this, and if you don't, maybe it's an episode you may step aside from, I have no idea. But we had a request. Somebody wants us to do a scenario where somebody's going out into the woods. They've provided us with a list of gear, location, and stuff like that. We'll disclose all that next week. And basically, they get lost or get hurt or break down, and what the step-by-step process would be to go through it, which we have kind of talked about this in the past, and we've talked about this, but I think maybe if we do it as a specific scenario and get it from a first responder's point of view as well as a bushcrafter's point of view, because it's no secret, Ben's been on search and rescue, I've been with the fire department, we have a little bit of insight on the first responder side of this, and we'll augment it with our bushcrafting side. And hopefully it'll be an interesting show, in all honesty. I think we can have a lot of fun with this, and there'll be a lot of good information come out of it. There may be some repetition, it's hard to say, but I think it'll be interesting nonetheless. So if that's something that you folks are interested in, definitely check us out next week. Of course, 9 o'clock, Atlantic time. As always, we'll see you next week. Get out there, have fun, be safe doing it. And if you folks have any topics you want us to talk about or scenarios or stuff like that, please feel free to reach out to us either through our YouTube comments or our Facebook page or wherever, you know what I mean? Instagram, Twitter, we're pretty much everywhere now. Just search Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures and you're probably going to find us. Night out.